In this segment of the Jefferson Exchange, how do you know when it's finally time to say goodbye to your car? Ashland Automotive's Zach Edwards joins us for our monthly automotive segment, The Squeaky Wheel. We're talking about automotive end-of-life issues, how you know when you've just kind of written one check too many. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, John.
So this is probably something that as a mechanic you get time and time and time again, people bringing in a car and saying, you know, I like this car, I want to keep it running, but at some point you reach the point of no return where it just becomes way too expensive. So what are some of the things that people should be looking for and deciding on when they say, you know, I think it's time for a new one?
Well, you're right. We do see this on a daily basis at the shop, and we talk to customers. We talk them through this dilemma on a daily basis, I think. And one of the common thought processes that people go through is, you know, the car is only worth so much, and the repair is costing more than the value of the car. And so it's interesting. We used to advise people that the car's probably not worth it. You should go out and get a new one. But then over time, we've seen enough people really struggle with the process of buying another car. If they're going to buy another used car, they're essentially trading one used car for another used car. And what they have, they know what they have. They know they did the brakes last year. They know they did the struts. They know the car has new tires, and they feel a sense of trust with that car. And it's really hard to acquire that trust with a new used car unless it has very, very low miles and is essentially like a new used car. So what we tend to advise people to do is just fix their old car unless they're ready to buy a brand new car, or if they're just really ready for a change. And that's where it's maybe a little bit of an emotional decision where, you know, you just think, I'm tired of this car and I'm ready to have a new car, even if it's slightly used. We just don't ever advise people to trade one used car for another very used car, because at that point, you just don't know what you're getting, and it could end up needing a huge amount of repairs as well. And then the customer's in the same boat.
The devil you know versus the devil you don't know.
Exactly.
Is there a particular system on the car that when it starts to go, you think, yeah, you really should get rid of this car? Or is this more of a global phenomenon that you look at?
There's not a particular system. Every car is different, obviously, and every driver's needs are different. But most people, they just need transportation. They need to get to their job. The job is what's making them the money and helping them pay their bills and live their life. And so the car is a tool in a way. And so we just try and take into account every person's individual needs and advise them accordingly. So, you know, some of the most expensive things on a car nowadays is the engine and the transmission, and they can be outrageously expensive, you know, up to $10,000 for a transmission or an engine. And so this always points back to what we talk about on the show a lot, preventative maintenance, how important it is to change those fluids like your engine oil and your transmission oil with the right types of fluids and at the right time given the type of driving you do. So everybody drives a little differently. Some people tow a lot of, like, we had one customer with a horse trailer. He had to change his transmission fluid much more frequently because he was always pulling a very heavy trailer. And the idea there is we're going to save this guy from having to buy a transmission, which might have cost in that particular car about $8,000. And so engines and transmissions are oftentimes deal breakers. If if an engine gets ruined and we give them the estimate, it very often the customer says, I think it's time to let this one go.
It's our Squeaky Wheel segment here on the Jefferson Exchange, our monthly visit with Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive. And we're talking about automotive end-of-life issues, how you know when it's time to move on to a new car or a newer car. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the statistics that I keep reading are that people are keeping their cars longer and longer, and a lot of cars seem to be much more reliable than they were, say, back in the 70s, when you would probably want to get rid of your car before it hit 100,000 miles. But now people are keeping cars, you know, upwards of 150 or even 200,000 miles. And it's not unusual for cars, you know, I think of like Toyota pickup trucks, you know, they have a real reputation of going forever. And you always read about, you know, this guy in Pennsylvania that has an old Volvo 122 that has a million miles on it. But as the car gets older, you talked about preventive maintenance. As the car gets older, is the preventive maintenance and that other kind of sort of routine sort of repairs that you have to do, do those become more frequent? And therefore, then the car gets more expensive?
Well, sometimes the repairs come in lumps, and it's a lumpy, there's a heavy moment in time where we'll see a customer maybe three or four times in a half a year. And so I don't think, certainly as a car ages, the maintenance does become a little more costly, but generally it's worth it to the customer to just maintain that car and fix that car instead of take on a car payment. And, you know, if you add up the annual expense, and you can't just add it up for 1 year, you have to kind of think about it over the course of time. So how much have I spent on this car in the last 3 years or in the last 5 years versus the 3-year term of a car payment or a 5-year term of a car payment? And you crunch those numbers, and a lot of times it's much cheaper to just fix your old car. And like you said, with cars lasting as long as they do now, I have a 1997 Toyota. I refer to it a lot on the show. It's got 255,000 miles on it. It doesn't use any oil. I change the fluids very regularly, put tires on it, put shocks, brakes, just regular maintenance stuff. But it's a good, decent truck. And, in the old days, cars didn't last much longer than 100,000 miles, especially domestic cars. And then Toyota started, you know, coming over into the market here in the 70s, I think, and or right around that time, and they've just blew the doors off of the American cars as far as longevity and reliability, and that kind of set a new tone for engineering and the quality of product being released in our market. And nowadays, cars, even domestic cars, we see old, you know, ratted out domestic cars that pushing 200,000 miles, and you would have never seen that back in the 70s. So people are investing in the same car longer and longer because they know, especially if they have a great maintenance history, they know they've taken good care of that car. The odds say that they should get a lot more miles out of it.
So the conventional wisdom back in, say, the 80s and 90s was if you wanted a car that was going to last a long time, you bought a Honda or a Toyota, Subaru, Japanese car. Maybe there were a few European cars that had reputations for longevity. Is it your experience that the American automakers have caught up now?
Well, they're definitely catching up. Of course, this is just my opinion, but and there's always going to be, you know, technicians and drivers who stayed true to the big three, you know, Chrysler, Chevy, and Ford in the 80s and 90s and always owned them and got high mileage out of them, but they were just less tolerant of abuse, I think. So, you would buy a Toyota or a Honda. A lot of people figured out that, hey, these things, they can take, we can miss a couple of oil changes and still get really high mileage out of these things. Toyotas and Hondas and Nissans, great cars, and I think that the domestic cars, they are catching up. They share a lot of technology nowadays. So you might see a Chrysler car on the road that's using a Mitsubishi engine, or you might see a Chevy on the road that's using German technology in a lot of the computerized engine management, some of that hardware and software. And so with that sharing of information and collaboration amongst different manufacturers, I definitely think the American car manufacturers have benefited from that.
We just actually had somebody call in a question and wanted you to comment generally on foreign versus domestic cars. I think we probably already covered that. But going back to something you said earlier, Zach, about the engines and the transmission, Are those things that you really, really want to focus on as you're caring for an aging car? And what aspects of the transmission or the engine should you really be concerned about? I assume with engines now, it will be timing belts.
Timing belts and timing chains. So a lot of cars are using the chains now instead of the belt. And we talked about this on the last show. Because of the return to a timing chain, you know, a chain is, you think of it just like a bicycle chain, except it's about two or three links wide. So it's much wider than a bicycle chain. And the difference being a chain needs to be submersed in an oil bath. And so a timing belt doesn't need any lubrication. So it's outside of the engine, where the chain is actually, it's not on the internal part of the engine, but it is encased in a cover that has to seal oil in and contaminants out. And so if you let that oil get, if that oil breaks down, if it ages out and you continue to drive the car, it's not going to be able to dissipate heat like it's supposed to, and then it's going to sludge up. And how that affects the timing chain is, it affects it in a really negative way. That chain can kink up and bind up, and then your engine starts running strangely. And so that can be very costly. So certainly timing belts and timing chains are a big part of maintenance. But again, it always goes back to just changing your oil. And a lot of that's an interesting question about, you know, how often should I change my oil? A lot of car manufacturers now are suggesting 7,000 to 10,000 miles. And while the oil can last that long in a lower mileage car, what can happen is, depending on the driving habits of the driver, the engine can become low on oil during that really long interval of time. So sometimes, especially around Ashland, we have drivers that it takes them 2 years to drive 10,000 miles. And that oil can become low in that time, depending on how the person drives or where they drive. And that's the real risk. And so we consider oil changes to be cheap in terms of versus how much an engine costs to replace. And so we just always err on the side of caution and recommend 3,000 miles for an older car and 5,000 miles, 5,000 to 7,000 for a much newer, low-mileage car that's using a synthetic oil.
It's our Squeaky Wheel segment, a monthly segment here on Jefferson Public Radio with Zach Edwards of Ashland Automotive. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or go online and send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. We have John in Eugene. Hello, John.
Hi there. So I had two questions. One, when you reference new engine and new transmission, do you mean a rebuild of the existing engine, because, you know, the block and stuff is fine. And then there's another set of moving parts that I've had wear out a few times and have never replaced on a maintenance schedule, and that's like wheel bearings. Should I replace? You know, one of them went out 6 months ago. Should I have replaced all of them? So the engine, transmission, rebuild, and the bearings. That's not fair.
Yeah, thanks for the question, or the questions. So the first question is really interesting, and we were just talking about it the other day with a customer at the shop. Rebuilt engines and transmissions are kind of a thing of the past, and this is a where terminology and words matter. When we think of an engine being rebuilt, we think of a guy in the shop maybe honing the cylinders with an attachment on his drill, and or sleeving the cylinders, and the cylinder head gets rebuilt at the machine shop, and then a new head gasket and new crankshaft bearings. But the liability in that and the expense of that is just, it's too great nowadays. So most shops won't do that. What they'll do is they'll sell the customer what's called a remanufactured. Now, remanufactured is different than rebuilt. Remanufactured is an engine that's actually rebuilt like we were talking about, except in a very, very elaborate facility where they're using tremendously expensive machinery and computerized testing equipment to verify correct tolerances and just verify the quality and longevity of that engine. And then the other thing that the customer gets is a really nice nationwide warranty when they pay for a remanufactured engine or transmission versus a rebuilt. Now, there are people that still rebuild transmissions here in the Valley, and they're professionals, and that's what they do. But there are certain transmissions that they won't go near because they're just too complicated, and the facilities need to be so clean and so just so dialed in, I guess, in terms of fail-safe checking and rechecking and testing before that product goes out the door. And it's just the equipment is can be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And
would those primarily be like the CVT transmissions?
Certainly CVT transmissions, some of the German transmissions from the, you know, starting probably in the mid-2000s and newer. Some of those transmissions are just very, very complicated. And, you know, Germans oftentimes set the tone for the future products. So they try these really innovative products, and sometimes they show up in domestic and Asian cars down the road, and sometimes you never see them again. But they're out there trying out this cutting-edge technology, and oftentimes it resurfaces in other, you know, products, and it's for the good of the industry, but sometimes it's not. And some of those transmissions are ones that no one wants to touch. And then in terms of the wheel bearing question, you know, that's interesting too. You don't replace wheel bearings in sets usually, but again, it depends on the driver. So if you live out on a really, really rough washboarded gravel road and you have your front right wheel bearing go bad, it might, you know, the shop might suggest that you just go ahead and do both of the front wheel bearings just to save you the time of two trips to the shop, because both of the wheel bearings have probably taken the same amount of abuse. But sometimes there's a, and this happens in Ashland, there's a sloped driveway, and you back out of your driveway every single day. You back out to the left, and that front left tire or the front right tire kind of takes that bump the same way every single day. And that left wheel bearing or that right wheel bearing takes more abuse than the other side, in which case that's not, you know, you don't really need to do them in pairs, and I don't think anybody would suggest you do them in pairs. The only thing that you really would gain is the convenience of not having to make another trip to the shop. And it's really hard to tell. Now we're talking crystal ball stuff, and we always refer to the crystal ball, which we don't have. We'd love to have. Customers would love us to have the crystal ball too, but we just don't have it. So we try and advise people the best we can, but it's not a general practice to replace wheel bearings in pairs or in fours, not at all.
Maybe get one of those eight-ball games on your shop counter. So getting back to the transmission and engine issue, you said that you really want to avoid replacing them because they're so expensive. Are there circumstances with a used car where you're trying to keep it going, you want to keep it, where it actually does make sense to replace the transmission or the engine?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do this all the time. We've put $6,000-$7,000 engines in 1998, 1999, you know, 20-year-old cars, and it's because the driver loves the car. The driver has maintained the car all along the way, and they just want to get back on the road quickly, and they don't want to deal with the hassle of shopping for a new car. Maybe they're not ready for that $25,000 commitment for a new used car, especially if, say, someone has a Lexus and it's a, you know, a year 2000 Lexus, it's 18 years old, that's a very nice car still. And if the suspension is in good shape on that car and the tires are in good shape and the body's in good shape, it's not uncommon at all for someone to just bite the bullet and spend $6,000-$7,000, put an engine in it, and they're down the road in a week, and it's very little hassle for them. And it does make sense compared to the, you know, the expense of a new used car or a brand new car. A lot of people think about, you know, technology is changing so quickly. I don't want to commit to a new car right now because maybe in 3 to 5 years, everything's going to be all electric. And so I'm just going to keep, you know, putting money into this one and keep it on the road in hopes that something, you know, significant is going to come up in the market and I'm going to want that instead. And so it's, and then that you also have sentimental value. A lot of times people are driving a car that was their parents' car, and it really means a lot to them, and they want to keep it on the road. They love the car. And the relationship our customers have with their cars is It always blows me away, and it always makes things interesting.
We're going to try and sneak one more call in here. This is Peter in Ashland. Hi, you're on the air with Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive.
Hi, just a quick one on Subaru transmissions. I've heard that there were certain years, maybe way back, that were terrible years. But anyway, wondering about sort of the vintage around the 05s and whether or not they have a propensity for having problems and whether or not you should avoid rebuilding them.
Okay, thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Well, again, Peter, the rebuild, I'm not sure if you meant rebuilding or remanufacturing. Subaru automatic transmissions, just like any other automatic transmissions, can fail. And in the earlier years, I think before 2005, more around 2000, we definitely replaced a lot of those automatic transmissions. As a matter of fact, my old Subaru, I replaced that automatic transmission in it because it was just totally blown out because nobody had changed the fluid. But yeah, you know, we, of course, don't do any in-house rebuilding of transmissions. We only purchase remanufactured transmissions, which we can pass the remanufacturer's warranty on to the customer, because in the past, we would try and help somebody out and maybe put in a used transmission, low mileage, in good shape, or we've never attempted to do an in-house automatic transmission rebuild. It's just not what we do. So I can't speak for the one or two shops in the valley that actually do that. But I think that those shops that do that, they do it every single day, and they have a much higher rate of success, or they wouldn't be doing it. But I do think also that as time goes on, that's going to be happening less and less, because the liability is just so huge, and the amount of cost to the customer, you want to be able to give them a really, really good product, and that's getting harder and harder with the complexity of these transmissions.
Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive with our Squeaky Wheel segment. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, John.
On the Jefferson Exchange.